Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Jonathan Farrell and Lisa Abramowitz. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Joining us now in this bond market, Mike Schumacher, Global Head of Macro Strategy at Wells Fargo. Mike, before we talk about levels, can we just talk about ranges, intraday trading ranges, on a two-year of, say, 20 basis points on any given day without economic data? Mike, what do you make of that?
It's just incredible, John. The day-to-day volatility has been mind-boggling. Traders here are whiplashed, and I think that's true of people across the markets. There have been so many cross currents. It can't sustain in terms of volatility like this, but it really has been wild to see, and hopefully slows down at least a little bit fairly soon.
Is it linear, or do you see a convexity where things are speeding up, like in the 10-year real yield? Is there a quickening there that you could predict for Q4?
Yeah, good point, Tom. Nonlinear, I would say. You think about the 10-year real yield, end of July was ballpark positive 10 basis points. It rose 150 basis points in just a bit more than 2 months. So now it seems to us it's up to an area that I would call the right zip code. 160 to 2% seems reasonable, certainly in the context of prior Fed cycles and layering on additional inflation this time with respect to the U.S. German reals crossed over to positive territory and tends to. That seems okay. So I suspect the speed is about done. It's going to slow down a fair bit, but volatility remains super high in tens as well.
Let's talk about the step down, Mike. We talked about the pivot and then the pause, as John was mentioning, and now the step down, which is actually new. I hadn't really heard that until this morning.
But we'd already discussed it.
We'd already discussed
ago,
it, right? Okay.
And now all of a sudden, it's back.
It's back. It's a thing, right? How does the Fed communicate that it's going to slow down without allowing the markets to move ahead of it? And some people argue the reason why there's optimism in markets is because they're getting a sniff of the step down. Do you buy any of this?
Just a sniff. I think that's probably right. It seems sort of obvious the Fed eventually would slow down, and yet the markets are all excited about this. And you put it in context and say, all right, so let's say the Fed goes 75 next week and follows that up with a 50 at the next meeting. Is that really an amazing result for risk investors? I would say not. And ultimately, the destination matters in terms of terminal rate. But I think the thing people really need to focus on the most is how long does the Fed keep that funds rate really high. So let's say up to 5%. We think it's going to be a long time, 6+ months, maybe a year. That's going to hurt equities, we think, and that's going to hurt risk. So that seems to be a little bit lost in the shuffle. People are too gung-ho on trying to predict the next couple meetings, not thinking enough about the destination.
Mike, what you just said is pretty interesting, that you could see 5% Fed funds rates for a year, possibly more, 6 months, a year, or even more. What does that do to the entire credit cycle that's predicated on pushing out maturities? Yes, but those maturities start coming up at the end of next year.
Yeah, it means this notion that you might have easy money come back fairly soon just doesn't really work. And credits probably take a hit with respect to defaults ramping up also. So it's not a positive in terms of credit, not a positive generally in terms of risk. But when you think about the incentives facing the Fed, especially Jay Powell, his number one priority is and will remain getting inflation back into a box. That means boosting the funds rate quite a bit, we know that, but also keeping it up there for a while.
Just want to pick up on this move in the gilt market as well. At the front end, gilt 2 years down 25 basis points. Mike, have you even got a call on the gilt market, or have you thrown the towel in?
Yeah, gilt market, John. I think we'll take a pass on that one for now. Let's see how it plays out with the whole PM sweepstakes, and then we'll Something about discretion and valor coming together, I think.
Yeah, I bet. Mike Shoemaker, thank you, of Wells Fargo.
Right now, Laura Rame joins us, Chief U.S. Economist, FS Investments. Laura, I go to ECO Go, and there is a raft, a Seattle slew of economic data coming out this week. And I look at it, and it mostly shows a resilient economy. Looking back, are you surprised where we are right now with 30, 40, 50 lines of ECO Go data? Not all that bad.
No, because our economy has so much positive momentum. And this is what happens when you're just early in an expansion. I think that that's maybe the big question. Are we early in an expansion? Are we late in an expansion? We're pretty early in an expansion. And we had so much fiscal stimulus, so much monetary stimulus thrown at us.
Right.
We're a big ship, Tom. It takes time to turn it.
And you've been a student of this for decades, going back way before you showed up on Wall Street. And my answer is, so we get a 5% 10-year yield for whatever reason. Is that the end of the world as we know it? We used to live that way, right?
It's not the end of the world as we know it. It's just a continuation of what we've seen. I mean, the volatility in the Treasury market is so extreme. We could be there in the next 10 days. I think at the end of the day, what we're now looking at, is the Fed moves later this year, the Fed moves beginning next year. Markets are so tripping over themselves to try to look around the corner, and it's causing these wild swings in expectations. And we're just stuck in this higher volatility world that is, with the economic uncertainty, it's crushing all these traditional asset classes.
Laura, you mentioned that it takes a long time to turn around this economy. And this is the concern of some people, the lag effects of the policies that are being implemented today. Do you have a sense of the difference between when the interest rate rises will affect the inflation side of things and when it will affect the economic momentum side of things?
You know, this is to me one of the critical questions when I get asked. It's what do I think the Fed should do versus what are they actually doing? And I think the time has come for them to take a slower pace of rate hikes and wait and see what kind of shape the economy is in. But the reality is, with housing and other interest rate sensitive sectors fueling so much growth over the last year and a half, they have really heavily impacted that. The question on the inflation side is how much of this is really still driven by supply. And I'm not talking about supply chain disruptions. Those have ebbed. What I'm talking about is labor supply at this point. Higher services costs, higher services inflation is really driven by higher wages. My concern is that the Fed is using models. They love their Phillips curve models, and they're using these models built in the 90s when labor dynamics were completely different.
So what does that mean in terms of what Nehru is? What does that mean in terms of what they should be doing or should be looking for in terms of employment and what that will mean for when wages will start to moderate?
It means that they may have to raise a lot more to get businesses to let go of workers. It means that the risk of a policy overshoot is higher. Their estimate of Nehru has always been a moving target, but today it may be lower given that people can work remotely, geographies are more fluid, and the fact that we just have this more constrained participation rate.
Laura, chapter 23 of any good Econ 101 book is about the markets. Do you suggest that this central bank, the Fed, is looking at the markets? When I look at bonds, I took a U.S. bond ETF. It's down 22% from its high 2 years ago, and that's better than a lot of others, to be blunt. I'm just fascinated if this Fed, the phrase is blink, not that they'll blink, but they become aware that a 401k has become a 201k?
I think that the Fed is highly aware of what they've done to financial markets. And in fact, they've mentioned that over and over again. This is another key concern, which is that recently Vice Chair Brainard commented on corporate margins, which actually remain relatively healthy. And if the Fed is looking to slow the economy down and looking to spread some of the pain of that slowing to the labor market, I think increasingly they're looking to spread some of that pain to corporate margins. It's not a good supportive outlook for equities into the beginning of next year. So I think the other question I get asked so often is, You know, have the markets seen their bottom? We're all talking about the risk of recession, but markets still, to me, don't have it priced in.
Well, I look at the priced in part. What do we do after the November 2nd meeting? I mean, I want to get on to December and frankly onto the meeting. I believe it's February 1 of next year. At some point, they have to respond to the markets.
Yeah, I think they would say they're not responding to markets. They would heavily argue that they're responding to the structural lags in their policy going to the economy. But tomato, tomato, I hear you. I think the point really is that they're going to have a big challenge messaging that, right? Because every time they talk about holding or talk about backing off their aggressive pace, markets start pricing in rate cuts. And, you know, earlier you were talking about how kind of the Fed has trained markets over the last 15 years to expect a rally at any time.
Yeah.
And I think this is what they're having to really beat markets up about right now. They're having to put into place a permanently higher trajectory, or at least, you know, a multi-year higher trajectory, because inflation is not going to fit neatly back into their 2% package. Yeah, it may come down from here, but it's going to stay really elevated. This is the fine line the Fed is having to walk, and it's causing them confusion when they're communicating. It's adding to bond market volatility. And all of this is just weighing on sentiment.
We were speaking with Bloomberg's Damian Sassauer earlier, and he was talking about how all of this is leading to the strong dollar that's really torpedoing a lot of emerging economies. Do you think that it's important for the Fed to step in on the dollar side of things to offset some of that pain as they combat inflation?
I don't know how they can, Lisa. I think that, you know, for now, the stronger dollar reinforces the monetary policy trajectory that the Fed is taking. And I think there's this other issue. The Fed knows that unilateral intervention isn't particularly effective. You know, this is a big, this, if they wanted to weaken the dollar at all, it would be a huge change from the sort of unspoken, stronger dollar policy that we've maintained for all this time. At the end of the day, I think they're more focused on what they can control, and they don't feel like the dollar fits easily within that sphere. So to the extent that their blunt instrument can control financial conditions, I think they see what the damage they've done in markets, and they feel like it's part of their move into restrictive territory to hit inflation.
The objective, not the unintended consequence.
Yeah,
Lara, thank you. Lara Raine of FS Investments.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.
Can I give a shout out to our next guest, Tom, who came on the program back in February, 115 on dollar yen. He said 150, and I almost fell out my chair laughing. And here we are, TK.
Here we are. Christopher Rohn, smarter than the average bear on that macro strategist at Strategus, is his Baird company. All I can say, John, is show me any literature that shows unilateral intervention works. It's not out there. Christopher Rohn, what is out there is a desire for catharsis, a VIX of 40 and the eight other shades of it as well. It's not out there, but what element of the market last week gave you a sense of catharsis?
Well, what I thought was most interesting about last week, you know, it was a good week for stocks, but what led? What's the only sector?
To me, the real yield.
New relative high versus the S&P was energy. Energy still leads. And you know, this is what's really interesting. On both down weeks and up weeks, your leadership really hasn't moved much. So I think, you know, if you look at where the positioning still is, and I would contend there's still a lot of positioning at, quote, the top of the market, the Apples and the Teslas and the Microsofts. Energy outperforming doesn't help that group. So I'm not sure a lot changed from a leadership perspective, which is more important to us whether the next 200 S&P points is up or down if the leadership doesn't change.
And you, with technical analysis, does quality matter, whether it's quality small cap, quality large cap, profitable companies showing EBITDA down the income statement? Yeah. Does that matter right now?
Well, I think that was the other message from the market last week. When you look at really what didn't move or didn't rally, what I would still call the garbage basically didn't bounce. I mean, things like Carvana or Roku or names that have basically were the speculative darlings of the cycle, which were thrown out, those didn't move last week. So I think the market continues to make this very clear distinction between what is quality and what is not quality. And I think ultimately, you know, what would be bullish from here? I think the market disassociating itself from things like Bitcoin or ARK or the IPOs, that I think would be a bullish development. That had to happen in 2002, if you remember, as we kind of came out of .com, the market had to disassociate itself with a lot of the garbage from the prior cycle.
I got to say, Chris, right now the headline is that Roku and Carvana are garbage, according to Chris Verone of Strategus. I don't know that that's necessarily the headline that you necessarily want, or maybe it is, but there is this issue that right now there are a lot of people who think that there's so much pessimism, who hear all the bearish talk on this program elsewhere and are sick of it. And you're seeing that come into the commentary. You're seeing that in the options market, where you're seeing actually people putting on much less protection against the market dropping another 10%. What do you make of that?
You know, it's a great question, Lisa. And I'm struck by a couple things. Number one, I think back to, you know, late 2008 into 2009. I think that feeling of capitulation was very different than this. I mean, I can remember not wanting to turn the screens on in the morning. I don't think we're quite there yet today. The second thing I would just note is be careful that, or at least distinguish between what people say they're doing with their money and what they're actually doing with their money. And I still think the gap between those two things is quite wide here. The flows, for example, are still pretty aggressive into both equities and bonds. I'm not sure that describes that cathartic or capitulative moment. We do have good seasonal support here for the next, call it 90 days. I want to be mindful of that. We have essentially oscillated between 3,600 and 3,800 for the better part of the last 6 weeks. I could get you to, let's call it 3,950, 4,000 on S&P, but then we have to deal with the very inconvenient fact that this is still a downtrend. And I think stocks rallying into downtrends are ultimately things that you want to fade down the road.
So there's a breaking point at some point that a lot of people foresee, yourself, Mike Wilson, and you did correctly call the yen going or weakening to 150 per dollar. How much is that going to be a potential catalyst? This question of what John called a bonfire of central bank foreign exchange reserves, how much is that going to be really the trigger?
Well, the language that we've used is just very simply, the market is back in charge here. And I think we saw that in the UK over the last several weeks. I suspect we're going to learn that here in Japan over the next number of months. I mean, the story is, what, $30 billion of intervention? I think that's what the FT reports on Friday. So that's a 50% increase from the $20 billion of intervention that we saw, I think, on September 22nd. After the September intervention, it took 14 trading days for yen to make a new low. So that's kind of our benchmark here. Let's see where we stand in 2 weeks. Are we talking about 152 yen again? Are we talking about 135 yen? I think that's going to be how we judge whether or not this is successful. Because when I see German 10-year yields at 250 and U.S. 10s at 420, and I see Japanese 10s at 26 basis points or 25 basis points, there's a clear outlier here. And I think that's an unsustainable path for the BOJ to remain on.
You see the gap lower on that chart, Bramo? There's just smoke coming off the bottom of it. What is it, about $40 billion worth now?
Your comment.
Just ridiculous. I want to look at sterling as well, 113.18. Latest reporting from the team in the UK, Tom, that Rishi Sunak, the former chancellor, is getting the public endorsements, and we've been tracking them here at Bloomberg News. We've verified public statements from 179 Tory MPs, so that's more than half of the Tory MPs now, Tom.
And this goes to 9 a.m. this morning, our time. What happens at 9 a.m., John?
Perhaps we get a prime minister.
They announce, they anoint the Queen.
Richie Sunak, maybe. Well, you've got to change the language there, Tom.
Excuse me.
We've got the King as well, sure.
Yes, thank you.
Big changes, Chris. I don't want to linger on it too long. I think this market wants to move on and move on quickly. You mentioned that maybe we've had one scalp in Liz Truss. Where does the next one come from? Chris, can you elaborate that on that a little bit more? Is that a change of leadership at the BOJ that's set to take place anyway? What is it?
Well, I think that's a good place to start. We wrote something to the effect in, I think, February or March that the BOJ was going to have its 1992 BOE type event. And I didn't also think that the BOE would have another BOE 92 type event. But of course, that's kind of what happened here over the last several weeks. So I do think ultimately this is heading towards some crescendo. And I think Japan is kind of ground zero for that. Now, also keep in mind, Tom, CNH this morning is at 730, 731, right? So the stresses that we've seen in the Chinese currency haven't abated here either. So I still have yen at 150 and I have Chinese at 730. I'm not sure that's the greatest environment for macro risk.
What is the technicals of the 10-year real yield now? We exploded out to 181. I'd call that catharsis. Yeah. You come back. But we set Chris Varone above that 160 level. What's that chart look like?
Well, this is a little bit of a pet peeve, that this idea that that real yields are actually positive. I guess theoretically they are positive if you're taking
But if you look at the 2-year
10-year yield versus 10-year break evens, but if we look at like the actual policy rate, I mean, what the Fed funds rate is 3.25 and inflation's 8. So I think for all intents and purposes for real people, the real interest rate is actually still quite negative. So I think there's more work to do here before the Fed really believes that short rates are offering a positive real yield.
Right. It was Chris Varone, our Fed speaker today.
He's our Fed whisperer.
He's our whisperer today?
He is our Fed whisperer.
It was very good. Hardly.
Hey, Chris, thank you. Great call, buddy. You know
you.
That. Just
killer.
Fantastic.
Thank
Chris Varone there, a strategist.
We're going to swing back to China right now. Peter Chivowitz with us, professor of international relations at the London School of Economics. Peter, the advantage we have here is your work at LBJ at Texas. What is the symbolism that this is the only issue the Republican and Democrat parties share in common in Washington? Frame what we observe this weekend for a unified Washington as they confront a third term Xi.
Morning, Tom. Well, I would say that for Washington, for Republicans and Democrats, what they saw on display in Beijing over the weekend will only reinforce the view that China is a force to be that the U.S. is going to have to contend with going forward. I mean, it was a very impressive, carefully choreographed display of Xi's power at the 20th Party Congress. But I think it's more likely to fuel, security competition in the region. One reason is that national security replaced the economy as the dominant theme in the run-up to this weekend in Xi's report to party members who were gathered in Beijing. And it's no accident, I think, that Xi held back today's latest report on China's lackluster third quarter economic performance, the data, until the party Congress wrapped up. And so what they saw on display was Xi consolidating his hold on power. And the belief is that Xi is, the kind of underlying premise is that Xi is interested in pushing China's ambitions in the region and expanding power, if only to compensate for the erosion, the slowdown in economic growth in China.
Peter, what does this mean about Taiwan?
Well, she was actually very careful, I think, on Taiwan. On the one hand, he made a reference to the fact that if push came to shove, they would use force there. On the other hand, there was a kind of olive branch to Taiwan, trying to integrate Taiwan into the larger Chinese economy. But I think the big story kind of locally over the weekend there was what was happening at exactly the moment that she was strengthening his grip on power at home. Japan and Australia announced that they were deepening defense cooperation. This happened on Saturday to counter Xi Jinping's growing preoccupation with power and influence in the region. Yeah. And it's significant because it actually follows on an announcement, a Japanese proposal to develop a counterstrike capability capable of attacking an enemy's command and control systems and military bases in the region. That is a big departure for Japan. If that becomes policy, most people think it will be, we become policy in December. And so it's just a kind of, it's pushing the region more and more into a kind of insecurity dilemma.
Peter, if you were advising some of the big U.S. banks or a multinational in the U.S. trying to capture some of the business in the world's second biggest economy, what would you tell them in terms of how big of a sea change this particular meeting, this particular anointment for a third term of Xi Jinping, really how important it was?
I think it's significant. I mean, I think he really kind of reinforced his commitment to the state over markets. And, you know, and I think for businesses, it will reinforce the need, desire to hedge their bets going forward, to look for other locations and so forth for investment. And I think the kind of general reaction to the markets this morning, I think that you were reporting on earlier, kind of points in that direction. So, as I say to people, to my students, you know, when it comes to East Asia, it's time to buckle up because a stronger Xi Jinping at home means greater insecurity and tension in the region.
Peter, I just want to pick up on something you said. Why does he care about the data if it's about the state over markets? Because really that data is not just for domestic consumption, it's for international consumption. Why does he still care about the economic data?
I think it's just that you're talking about an event that is so carefully choreographed, the Party Congress, that to have that kind of come out, I think it was supposed to be released a week ago, so during the Party Congress or at the beginning of the Party Congress, might have been unsettling for some who have access to that information, even if most Chinese would not really have access to it unless they were provided it. So I think it was kind of off note for where he wanted to take the Party Congress.
Peter, wonderful to hear from you. What a time.
Good to be
history,
with you, John.
Peter Trubovitz, thank you, sir, of the London School of Economics.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Thanks for listening. Join us live weekdays from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg Television each day from 6 to 9 a.m. for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. And subscribe to the Surveillance Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the terminal. I'm Tom Keene, and this is Bloomberg.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Attention campers, the new Camp Snoopy at Kings Island brings your family summer camp fun all season long. Head to Camp Snoopy with Charlie Brown and the whole Peanuts gang for fun and adventure. Race forwards and backwards on the new family boomerang coaster, Snoopy Soapbox Racers. Explore on your own with more space to roam at Beagle Scout Acres. And don't forget to grab a snack at Pigpen's Mess Hall. It's a new way to play with the Peanuts gang at Camp Snoopy. Now open, only at Kings Island, for the fun of it.